Yevamos Daf Pei Beis. We are going to pick up on payoff on the Beis, halfway down the Amud. Just as a brief introduction, really, yesterday's Daf. Yesterday's Daf and today's Daf are really two halves of one long sugya. So we go back to yesterday's Daf and look back at the Mishnah Pei Aleph Amud Aleph there. The Mishnah informed us that if a Kohen marries a woman, so he feeds her truma. That is not what the Mishnah's point is, as we knew that already. That is a basic yisod that's already been established back in the 7th parak of the Masechta. Our Mishnah here in yesterday's Daf highlights various Kohanim that have certain disabilities, and yet their wives can eat truma. So the first case in the Mishnah was the Sris Chama, Kohen who is congenitally impotent, and marrying a Bas Yisrael. So Machila B'Truma, she's allowed to eat truma, as we already established. If it's a Sris Adam, so then there's a prohibition for a Sris Adam to marry a woman, either Krishovcha or Tsuadaka, but a Sris Chama is allowed to marry a woman. And so there is no prohibition whatsoever for a Sris Chama to marry a woman. And not only that, but the marriage is so sanctioned that if he's a Kohen and she's a Bas Yisrael, she's allowed to eat Truma. That was the first point of the Mishnah. Second part of the Mishnah is Rabbi Yosef and Rabbi Shimon saying that if an androgynous Kohen marries a woman, Ma'achila B'Truma, he is allowed to provide for a Truma. Androgynous, as we established already in yesterday's Daf, as we do numerous times throughout Shas, is somebody who exhibits both male and female genitalia. And so so anatomically is a male-female, but halachically is a male. Or at least that seems to be the sheet of Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon, that the androgynous married to a Bas Yisrael is allowed to provide her for truma. So that means that the marriage is a sanctioned marriage. Obviously, a marriage is only between a man and a woman. And so therefore, the androgynous is a man, halachically a man. Anatomically a man-woman, but halachically a man. That seems to be the simple reading of the Mishnah. Then, yesterday's daf, we went to the Gemara, and we had a machlok between Rabbi Yochanan, Reish Lakish, Rabbi Yochanan. So first, let's present the sheet of Rabbi Yochanan. It's the most straightforward position, and that is Rabbi Yochanan's of the position. The androgynous is a man, like we just got done saying. Meaning it's not a suffix, it's not any kind of doubt whatsoever, as a vados, as a definitive position in terms of which box to check. So the androgynous checks the box of a man and only that of a man. And so therefore, Rabbi Yochanan's of the opinion that that the Kohen's married to this woman, a Bas Yisrael, so he could provide for her truma, he could provide for her chas v'shok, meaning all the manos kahuna that he's entitled to, so he's entitled to provide for her as well. That is the shita of Rav Yochanan. Reish Lakish, on the other hand, takes a really interesting position, which is that the androgynous is not a vade zachar, but rather a suffix zachar, meaning not only anatomically is this person going to be exhibiting both male and female, but halachically, the person is going to be skating between male and female halachically. And categorically, the person is somewhere in a state of flux or suffix in terms of whether the person is a male or a female. Male enough so that the marriage will have some validity to it, but not enough so that he can provide for her chaz v'shok. Chaz v'shok being matnas kahuna of a karban shlamim. The allowance of the Mishnah, according to Reish Lakish, is only going to be for Truma, and as the Gemara pointed out yesterday, only for Truma Bezman Hazeh. Truma Bezman Hazeh is a Din D'Rabbanan, it's not a Din D'Oraisa, since fundamentally Truma Bezman Hazeh is a Din D'Rabbanan, so the Chachamim relax the threshold of what an androgynous can do, meaning androgynous is a suffix according to Reish Lakish, under normal circumstances, cannot provide for her Matanus Min HaTorah, but if you're talking about Truma D'Rabbanan, which is, as the name indicates, the Din D'Rabbanan, so that the androgynous can go ahead and provide for his wife. So this is a basic machlokes between Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan within the Mishnah of the sheet of Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon. So again, just to outline, that's already a lot of information. So in the Mishnah, Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon say that an androgynous Kohen married to a woman can provide for a truma, and in the Gemara, machlokes Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan, whether that's a totally unrestricted allowance for him to provide any matnas kahuna, because the Chachamim view this androgynous as a vade zacher, that's the sheet of Rabbi Yochanan, or no. The Mishnah's allowance for him to provide for a truma is only bizman hazeh with the trumas de rabbanan. But if we're talking about real matanos like chaz v'shok bizman beis hamikdash and truma bizman beis hamikdash, and we point this out yesterday, even truma mid de rabbanan but bizman beis hamikdash, so under those circumstances, no, the androgynous will not be able to provide for his wife because the androgynous is not a vade zacher, but rather just a suffix zacher. Good. That is the machlokes Reish Lakish and Rav Yochanan. Within that machlokes, what comes out is the following. Another machlokas that came out of yesterday's daf, which we're going to articulate even more in today's daf, and that is truma bizman hazeh. Meaning nowadays that we no longer have a base of mikdash, we haven't had a base of mikdash for nearly 2,000 years. So what's the status of truma bizman hazeh? Is Truma nowadays a Din D'Rabbanan? Because we don't have a Beis HaMikdash, and we assume that once the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, the Kedusha is gone, the Kedusha in the Beis HaMikdash is gone, and we're going to connect to that, the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael is gone as well. And so therefore, the only requirements of Trumas and Maitzos nowadays is just a Din D'Rabbanan. The Chachamim instituted to take off Trumas and Maitzos. But it's no longer Din D'Oraisa. No, maybe even though the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed, there still is a requirement to be Mafresh Trumas and Maitzos min HaTorah. And so therefore, the Truma and Maitzos, the Truma that the Kohen receives is a Din D'Oraisa. So that turns out also to be a Machlokes between Reish Lakish and Rav Yochanan. Rav Yochanan is of the opinion that Truma's Bezman is a Din D'Oraisa, even in the absence of the Beis HaMikdash. And Reish Lakish says no, that Truma Bezman is only Din D'Rabbanan. Without a Beis HaMikdash, the Kedusha of the Beis HaMikdash of Eretz Yisrael is Nisbatel, the Kedusha goes away, and so therefore there's no longer a din of Trumas and Maisos Min HaTorah, it's just Mid Rabbanan. That's another machlokus between Reish Lakish and Rav Yochanan, connected to the previous machlokus. One more machlokus between Reish Lakish and Rav Yochanan, also connected to all of the above, is the question of Davar Shebeminyan. Now, in order to understand this, let's go over some basic information that we did yesterday, but let's review again today. And that is Davar Shebeminyan. When I have something which is chashuv, which is something which is significant, so it's impervious to bittul. Normally when I have a mixture of items, one's aser and two are heter, so normally we say that there's bittul berov, a majority of heter against a minority of iser. So generally speaking, the rule is bittul. Okay, that's obviously an oversimplification, but that's the general rule. However, when the iser is something which is significant, it's a davar chashuv, so therefore it becomes impervious to bittul. Bittul blockers, as we say numerous times throughout the Shas. My turn. Take it or leave it. But anyway, so what's going to become impervious to bittul? So one of the examples, there are numerous examples, but one of the examples is a davar shebeminyan. When something is sold by count, so then it becomes something which is substantial, significant. I count the items before I sell them. I count the items before I buy them. So when something's sold by count, so therefore it's a davar chashuv, it's a davar shebeminyan, it becomes impervious to bittul. So even if I had 1,000 of heter against one iser, but that iser is something which is counted, so then there's not going to be bittul. Within this concept, there's a machlokes between Reish Lakish and Rav Yochanan. Rav Yochanan is of the position that there's a Mishnah Arla. The Mishnah Arla introduces us to this idea, and the Mishnah Arla says, Es Shedarko Limanos. Now, according to Rav Yochanan, the way I presented it is the correct girsa in the Mishnah, which means that the only thing that becomes impervious to bittul, the only thing that becomes resistant to bittul, is only going to be those things that are sold exclusively by count. Meaning, if it's an item that's generally sold by count, that's not a davar chashuv. It's only something which is exclusively sold by count, meaning the only way that it's sold is by counting the item. On the other hand, Reish Lakish is of the opinion that no, that it's not eshedarko limnos, but rather kol shedarko limnos. The way to say over the Mishnah in Arla, according to Reish Lakish, is that it doesn't have to be exclusively sold by count. Even if it's generally sold by count, so that is going to be considered a davar chashuv, it's a davar shebeminyan, and then that becomes resistant to bittul. How does that machlokus now play with our machlokus about whether Truma Bezman says d'oraisa d'rabbanan? So it goes like this. We have a braisa, we saw it yesterday. It's on Pei Aleph Amud Beis. And the braisa brings down that if I have igule dvela, if I have cakes of figs that are generally sold by count, not always, but generally sold by count, and I have a mixture, and the ratio is 1 to 100. Remember, whenever we're talking about truma, so the ratio for bittul is 1 to 100. Generally, all I need is rope, but by truma, it's significantly more. It's 1 to 100. So as long as you have a ratio of 1 to 100, so the Mishnah tells us that there is, in fact, going to be bittul. Now, why should there be bittul? Meaning, even though I do have the ratio, but it's something that's generally sold by count. So why is there going to be bittul? So it depends who you ask. First, let's ask Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish, why would you say that there's bittul in such a situation? Now remember, as far as Reish Lakish is concerned, as long as it's generally sold by count, so that is enough of a reason in order to prevent bittul. Meaning, it doesn't always have to be sold by count, as long as it's generally sold by count, so that's going to block bittul. So, Reish Lakish, why would you say in such a situation, in that case of igule dvela, is there going to be bittul? Oh, so his answer has to be that even though it's a davar shebeminyan, but we're talking about Truman Bezman Hazeh. Truma Bezman Hazeh is a Din D'Rabbanan, so even though under normal circumstances there would not be bittul, but since the Isser is a milder Isser, since it's an Isser D'Rabbanan, so therefore there's going to be bittul. That's if we ask Reish Lakish. Now let's turn to our attention to Rav Yochanan. Rav Yochanan, same question. Igule Dvela, the Braisa tells us that there's going to be bittul. Why is there going to be bittul? So Rav Yochanan will tell you very simply, look, as far as Truma, there's no difference whether there is or there isn't a Beis HaMikdash. Truma bizman is ezedin daraisa. So there is no tapering off of the Isser of Truma. So why is there going to be Bittul? So for that, he attacks the problem from the other direction, notably, that it's a Davar Shebiminyan, but it's only generally sold by count. Remember, Rav Yochanan's of the opinion that the only time that Bittul is going to be blocked is when it's exclusively sold by count. Since the Igulei Dvela are generally sold by count, so therefore, it is not considered a Davar Shebiminyan, and that's why there's going to be Bittul. So this Machlokus of Es Shedarko Limnos and Kol Shedarko Limnos is going to be necessarily connected and tied to the question of whether or not Truma Bizman says Daraisa Darabanan. Now, everything I just said admittedly is a little bit complex. It's a little bit complicated. If you're a little bit confused, so I'm going to recommend you just go back, play the last, 3 to 4 minutes, hear it again, and the more times we all hear it, the more times we're going to get clarity on the issue. Now, we left off yesterday in Pe'alaf Amud Beis, and we're going to pick it up right after the Braisa. Rav Yochanan Savar, it's about 6-7 lines down in Pe'alaf Amud Beis, Rav Yochanan Savar, Eshedarko Limana Shaninu, Reish Lakish Savar, Kol Shedarko Limana Shaninu. Okay, so we just went over this together, so I'm just going to go on in the Gemara. Mai Chaticha. Now, there's a second Braisa. The Gemara in the Amud Aleph of yesterday's Daf noted the second Braisa, warned us, foreshadowed its arrival, and here we're going to learn the second Braisa together. Detanya, we learned the Braisa, Chaticha Shachatas Tmeya. If I have a piece of chatas, carbon chatas, but it became tamei, shinisavra b'mei chaticha shel chatas taharos, and it got mixed up with 100 pieces of chatas, which are tahor. So basically, it's iser v'heter, but in this particular case, it's not being described as iser v'heter. It's tuma tahara, but of course, a carbon tamei is prohibited to eat. So if I have 1 to 100 of tamei versus tahor, v'chein. Same scenario, but just using lechem apanim as the example, where I got one piece of tamei lechem apanim getting mixed up with 100 pieces of tahor lechem apanim. Remember, lechem apanim can only be eaten by zirchei kohuna in the azara. It basically has the status of a mincha, so ta'ale. So there is, in fact, going to be bittul in such a scenario. And Rabbi Yehuda Amar Lo Tala, Rabbi Yehuda says that there's not going to be bittul. At least for the time being, we're going to ignore Rabbi Yehuda, not ignore him, just simply skim over his position. We're going to come back to his position in just a couple of minutes. But if, let's say, the mixture is chatas tahor mixed in with chul and tahor, and everything is tahor, and everything is kosher, it just happens to be chatas, which can only be eaten by zirchei kohuna, gets mixed up with chulin that can be eaten by anybody. Same thing with lechem apanim, where I have lechem apanim tahor mixed up with chulin tahorin. So under those circumstances, lo tale. Everyone agrees that there's not going to be bittul. Okay. Now, that second half of the braisa absolutely needs clarification why there's not going to be bittul in that case. But in the meantime, however, all of our focus and attention is going to go to the first half of the braisa. Katani miyas reisha tale. So within that first half of the braisa, obviously, we have explaining to do. Now, who's got explaining to do? So the truth of the matter is if you ask Rav Yochanan, he's extraordinarily happy. Again, let's do a quick recap. According to Rav Yochanan, the only thing that's going to be subject to bittul blockage is only going to be those things which are exclusively sold by count. Es shedarko limanus. So if it's something that's generally sold by count, but not always, so it's not a davar shebiminyan, therefore eligible for bittul. Our pieces over here, chaticha shechatos. So how are they sold? Well, it's not a great question because a chatas is not going to be sold. But if I have a piece of meat, how are pieces of meat sold? Generally by count, but not always, not exclusively by count. So the chatichos fall under the category of kol shedarko limanos. According to Rav Yochanan, that's not enough in order to block bittul, which means that we are eligible and open for bittul. And what did the beginning of the braisa tell us? There's going to be bittul. So, and even though it's an issa daraisa, so what? Meaning it's eligible for bittul, there's going to be bittul. So if you're Rav Yochanan, you were very happy, you were very pleased with the braisa you just learned. Now, if you're Reish Lakish, now we have a problem. Because according to Reish Lakish is of the opinion that what is not eligible for bittul, anything that's sold by count, even if it's generally sold by count, even though sometimes it's not sold by count, but that's enough to qualify as a davar shebiminyan, and therefore it is not subject to bittul. So for Reish Lakish now, this braisa presents a serious problem. Because this braisa told us that when I have chaticha shel chatas that gets mixed up with chaticha shel chatas tomatoes getting mixed up with chaticha shel chatas chaticha shel chatas taharos, a little bit of a tongue twister. So under those circumstances, the braisa told us there is going to be bittul. Reish Lakish is very uncomfortable with that position. There shouldn't be bittul, meaning it's a davar shebiminyan, and therefore there should be no bittul. So why did the Braisa casually and very comfortably tell us that there's going to be bittul in such a circumstance? So this Braisa presents a serious problem for Reish Lakish. So what the Gemara now is going to do is defend Reish Lakish. So what we're going to do in the Braisa is that we're going to make an ukimta in the Braisa. The Braisa is not talking about where the pieces are lined up one with another, but rather all the pieces were cut up and put into a cholent. Okay, I know I'm giving a somewhat more modern picture of what we're looking at over here, but basically it's a tarovis of a cholent, but it's not actual pieces together. It is not something saw by count. So the Gemara says, wait 1 second, we're talking about a cholent, yahachi, my time under Rav Yehuda. Now, within this ukimta of the Braisa, we have to assume that every other part of the Braisa is talking about the same case. Once you give a case to a Braisa, you have to assume that the remainder of the Braisa is working within the same case. So now, we're talking about a cholent. According to the Tanakhama, there's going to be bittul. Now, of course there's going to be bittul, meaning it's no longer countable items. They're items that are now ground up together. You made a big cholent out of this whole mixture. The ratio is 1 to 100, perfect for bittul. So therefore, there's going to be bittul. That is the Tanakhama. Now we have to understand the Shita Rav Yehuda. What's behind the Shita Rav Yehuda? So Rav Yehuda Latame, as we turn to the top of Pei Beis Amud Aleph. So Rav Yehuda being consistent with his general position, Damar Min Bimino Lo Batul. There's not going to be Bittul by Min Bimino. Rashi tells us, go to the Perek of Kisu Adam, go to the Perek of Komets, Varas Perakim throughout Shas, meaning this is a general Shas topic that's covered in numerous Masechtas, Chulin, Zvachim, also Menachos. Anyway, we get to hear this concept of Rav Yehuda numerous times. Back in Yuma, we discussed it also in detail, and that is that when I have like items mixed together, one Aser being and one Mutter, so there, for Rav Yehuda, Min B'mina Lo Bato, there's never going to be Bittul. As long as the general taste and the flavors of the items are similar to one another, just happens to be one's Aser and one's Mutter, so there is never going to be Bittul regardless of ratio. Good. Without elaborating more on Shitas Rabbi Yehuda, that is Shitas Rabbi Yehuda, so that's how you understand. Meaning, even though it's a cholent, and even though there's not a davar shebiminyan, but still, Rabbi Yehuda is lishita so, that there's no bittul by min bimino. Avaloni moch mai. So, to which the Gemara says, so let me get this straight. So, if it's a cholent, there's not going to be bittul. What if it's not a cholent? Meaning, what, like we originally thought, that they are pieces mixed together. So, tala, so that means that they're, I'm sorry, lo tala, so that means there's not going to be bittul. So adni. So then the Gemara says, so really. So now there's a halachic difference between where it was mixed together as a cholent, cut up and mixed together as a cholent, versus when they were large pieces mixed together. So adni avachaticha shechatas taros nisar v'meichaticha shecholentaros lo tala niflag v'nesta b'didei v'amed v'amamor mishini mocha v'aloni mocha lo tala. So the Gemara asks now a very simple question, a question that we hear all the time throughout Shas, which is that instead of making a contrasting case and having to go to a different set of circumstances, wouldn't it be sharper and wouldn't it be a better contrast to compare two cases that are nearly identical one to one another with only one small difference between the two of them, where in one case the halacha would be that there's bittul, and the next case the halacha there's no bittul. Meaning, it'd be a lot better for the Braisa to say that if I have this mixture of chatas and chatas, it just happens to be that one's tamei and the other's tahor, so if it was made into a cholent, cut up into pieces and made up into a cholent, so then there is going to be bittul. On the other hand, if they are not chopped up and not made up into little pieces, but rather they are large pieces, countable pieces, so there's not going to be bittul. That's a much better contrast because we're basically staying with the same case and the only point of difference is going to be whether it's chopped up or whether it's in large pieces. Shouldn't that be better? And why did the Braisa have to move to another case? So the Gemara's answer, Taros, but Taros Adiflay. So the Gemara says, yeah, you're right. In other words, that is a better contrast. However, what the Braisa didn't want to do is miss an opportunity of teaching us a Chiddush. Because really, what the second part of the Braisa is coming to tell us is that if I have Tahor getting mixed up with Tahor, Tahor carbon chatzis with Tahor chulin getting mixed together, even though the ratio is 100 to 1, there is not going to be bittul in that case. The Braisa thought that was an exceptional Chiddush, and so even though we're forfeiting a better contrast in cases, but the Braisa elected to go with this case because this case is really demonstrating a bigger Chiddush. What we have yet to do, and I'm going to do soon enough, is I'm going to explain the second half of the Braisa. Meaning, why is it in the second half of the Braisa is there not going to be bittul? Hold that thought. We're going to get back to it in just a moment. And effectively, the Gemara asked the question right now. Meaning now it comes out that according to Reish Lakish, how do we set up the first part of the Braisa? We're talking about where it's a chulant. I have Taur Chatas getting mixed up with Tamei Chatas, but they were chopped up and put together in small little bits. So these are no longer countable items. As long as I have proper ratio, there's going to be bittul. And in the first half of the Braisa, what did we learn together? There's going to be bittul. In the second half of the Braisa, we have to assume it's the same thing. Chop the pieces together of Chatas Tahora and Chul and Tahora, and there's not going to be bittul. Now that everything is chopped up, so the Gemara now wants to know, what's the difference between the ratio and the Seifo? Why in the ratio is there bittul? Why in the Seifo is there no bittul? So Maishna ratio, Maishna Seifo. Amr of Shisha Bered the Ravidi Resha Betumas Mashkin the Rabbanan Sefer Daraisa. So the Gemara makes the following attempt to explain the difference between the Resha and the Sefer. Within the Resha, we're talking about Tuma, but only Tuma on the Rabbanan level. Okay, go through Rashi over here. I'm not going to go through it right now. How it's possible that we're only talking about a Tuma the Rabbanan? Suffice to say, just for a simple understanding of a Gemara, you can get it. You can get a Tuma the Rabbanan, which obviously is a lighter form of Tuma. And so therefore, when I have a mixture of Tumah and Tahara, so there, we're going to be Mekel and allow for Bittul. On the other hand, Seifa, which is a Tumah de Araisa, so then there's not going to be Bittul. So the Gemara says, Aval Tumah Sheretz, Mai, Lotala. So that would mean that if we're talking about Tumah Sheretz, there's not going to be Bittul. So Ad Nisai Seifa, so once again, the Gemara says, so why did the Braisa have to move and shift to a different case? When really the distinction, the better distinction, the crisper distinction, could be made within the case of Bittul itself. Within the case of Tumah itself. Rather than having the second case of the Braisa be a case of Chatas and Chulin, all being Tahor, Lo Tala, where there's not going to be Bittul, Niflog v'lisne bidida, make a sharper and clearer distinction. Which is Bamed, Ramamor and Betumas Mashkin, Ava Betumas Sheretz Lo. So the Gemara says, wouldn't it have been better that in the Braisa could have said Tumas Mashkin being case number one, again, a Tumah de Rabbanan, therefore allowing for Bittul. And in the second case of the Braisa, we could have given just a simple case of Tumah de Araisa. Notably, the Kashim came into contact with Sheretz, or the person came into contact with Sheretz. And now the Braisa is making a really, really stark contrast between a Tumah de Rabbanan and Tumah de Araisa, all else being equal. And in the case of Tumah de Rabbanan, there would be Bittul. In the case of Tumah de Araisa, there wouldn't be Bittul. Why couldn't the Braisa do that? The Braisa should have done that. The Gemara says for a second time, Tahor b'Tahor z'adiflei. So the Gemara says, yeah, you're right. That, of course, would have been a better contrast. But the Braisa did not want to miss up on this opportunity, a golden opportunity to teach a tremendous chiddush. That when I have chulin and kashim getting mixed together, everything's tahor, but chulin and kashim getting mixed together, and even though I have the right ratios, there's not going to be bittul. Again, for reasons which we haven't articulated why, but it's such a chiddush, it's so novel, I would have thought differently. The Braisa didn't want to miss that opportunity. The Braisa therefore gave us that case. Rabba Amar Reisha Yisr La V'Seifa Yisr Kareis. Rabba tries to give another distinction between the Reisha and the Seif and the Braisa. The Reisha is talking about where it's a lav, meaning it's tumah, but tumah that only results in a lav, and only a lav. For example, let's say you're tahor, but the food, in this case the carbon, is tamei. So there, that would represent a lav, but nothing more than a lav. On the other hand, if you're tamei and the kashim are tahor, and you eat it, that's an iser kares. So maybe that's the distinction between the reisha and the seifa. The Gemara says, it's a nice suggestion, but that's not going to work. V'ha-rabba hu da'amar kol b'daraisa lo shna iser lav v'lo shna iser kares. Rabba says very clearly that when we're talking about iser daraisa, there's not going to be a difference whether it's a regular iser daraisa that's only a lav bearing iser daraisa versus an iser kares. There's not really going to be a difference between the two. And so therefore, kasha. That's really difficult because then the distinction that Rabba himself proposes doesn't work based on what Rabba himself said. Rav Ashi also tries to explain what would be the difference between the Reisha and the Seifa. In the Reisha, we're talking about Stam and Isser. In the Seifa, we're talking about a more intense and serious Isser. Notably, Davar Sheish L'Matirin, something that's going to be Aser now, but eventually it's going to be Mutter. As we learned in the beginning of Masechta Beitza, a Davar Sheish L'Matirin, there's never going to be Bittul. Why? Rashi over there in the Gemara in Beitza, Daf Gimel says, Asha tochlenu be iser tochlenu be heter. While instead of rather eating it now in a state of iser, even though their bittul occurred, but you still can't ignore the fact that there's iser there, just with an allowance to eat it, Rather than do that, wait till after Yontif, and that in the case of Beitzah, we're talking about Yontif, wait till after Yontif, and then the egg that's laid on Yontif, that was laid on Yontif, is now going to be Mutter. Asher tochlana be'isser, tochlana be'heter. So therefore, there's never going to be bittul by davar sheyesh lo matirin. What Rav Ashi is proposing over here is that our case is a davar sheyesh lo matirin, to which the Gemara immediately reacts. Our case is a case of davar sheyesh lo matirin. V'hadar Rav Ashi b'dusehi. Rav Ashi over here is not giving a serious answer in this context over here. Meaning, of course, Rav Ashi is a serious person giving serious answers. But in this context over here, this answer doesn't work over here. Because leman. When we say it's a davar sheyesh lo matirin, who are we talking about? Ila kohen mishur shari. Meaning in the second case where we're talking about kachim and chulin getting mixed together, if you're a kohen, you can eat everything. There's no davar sheyesh lo matirin, everything's mutter on the spot. And ili yisrael ola masr. And if we're talking about to Yisrael, it's always going to be usr. Meaning the kachim is usr today, the kachim to the Yisrael is going to be usr tomorrow. I'm being a little bit imprecise. Tomorrow it's going to be nosr, it's going to be usr to everybody, but you understand. Meaning, the kachim in this case, kachim over here is chatas. The chatas is always going to be asr to Yisrael. This is not a case of davar sheyesh lo matirin. In fact, it's a little bit difficult to even fathom to understand how even Rav Ashi even attempted to use this answer over here. Meaning, what was the havamin of Rav Ashi? As the Gemara's rejection is so straightforward, so basic. It really is a little bit challenging to understand what Rav Ashi was originally even thinking. Anyway. So the Gemara says that Rav Ashi is not giving a serious answer in this context. Okay. Adkan, that takes us to the end of the first part of today's daf, where in Pei Beis Amud Aleph, two-thirds of the way down, and so let's quickly wrap this up. We have been litigating now for almost an Amud of Gemara regarding the positions of Rav Yochanan and Rav Ashi in terms of what is going to be subject to Bittul. According to Rav Ashi, according to Reish Lakish and Rav Yochanan, so we have been litigating what is going to be subject to Bittul. Here's what we know. We know that if it's something which is a Davar Chashav, it's not going to be open and eligible for Bittul. A Davar Shebeminyan is not going to be a subject to Bittul. A Davar Shebeminyan is Chashav, it's significant, and therefore impervious to Bittul. We also know that Reish Lakish and Rav Yochanan argue in terms of what exactly is the parameter of Davar Shebeminyan. There's a Mishnah Arla, and they argue in terms of what's the correct text of that Mishnah and Arla. According to Rav Yochanan, the Mishnah Arla should be read, Es Shedarko Limanos. A Davar Shebeminyan is something where it's only and exclusively sold by count. Anything other than that, even though it's generally sold by count, is not a Davar Shebeminyan. That is why, according to Rav Yochanan, when it comes to the Igule Dvela, the cakes of figs, which are generally sold by count, subject to Bittul. When it's talking about the chataos, chaticho shel chataos, the pieces of carbon chatas getting mixed up, also subject to Bittul, because those are items that are generally sold by count, not exclusively sold by count. So that is the sheet of Rav Yochanan. It comes out now that for Rav Yochanan, so a lot of these braces come out very good. On the other hand, you have Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish is of the opinion that the way to learn the Mishnah in Arla is kol shedarku lemanos, which means that according to Reish Lakish, the definition of a davar shebeminyan is a wider definition. It is more expansive, which means that even things that are generally sold by count fall under the category of a davar shebeminyan, and that means that the igule dvela are a davar shebeminyan. There should be no bittul. Why? By the igule dvela of truma is there bittul? Because this now fits into yesterday's daf. That's because of according to Reish Lakish. True, it's truma bismanazet, truma bismanazet, and then the rabbanan. And the chacham are more flexible by din de rabbanan. What about the case of chataos for Reish Lakish? How come the Braisa tells us that a carbon chatas is getting mixed up with other carbon chatases, and we're talking about chatichos, pieces that are generally sold by count? So the Braisa tells us that there's going to be bittul. Why is there going to be bittul for Reish Lakish? So that's a really difficult question. And in trying to attempt to answer the question, the Gemara spent nearly an amud. From the bottom of the previous Amud Pei Alpha and Beis all the way to where we are currently right now, the Gemara tried to explain the Braisa according to Reish Lakish. How, according to Reish Lakish, can you maintain that the Chaticha is a Davar Shebeminyan, which generally is not subject to Bittul, and yet the Braisa says it is in fact subject to Bittul? And then, after having given the basic explanation, which is that the Braisa is not talking about where there are pieces, but rather it was cut up and put into a cholim together, so then there's a lot of collateral damage, if you will, Then there's a lot of explaining to do, meaning you then have to go to the other portions of the Braisa, explain the sheet of Rabbi Yehuda, explain the second half of the Braisa, and then it becomes much more complex in terms of dealing with the second half of the Braisa. Ad kan, not the end of the daf, but the end of the first part of today's daf. V'sav Rav Yochanan, we are continuing in the Gemara Pei Beis Amud Aleph, two-thirds of the way down. V'sav Rav Yochanan Truma Bezman Azeh Daraisa. So let's go over what we already saw and what we already know. That according to Rav Yochanan, Truma nowadays is a Din Daraisa. V'atanya, the Gemara says, why don't we consider the following Braisa? Shtei Kupos, Acha Shachul, and V'acha Shal Truma. So let's say you have two boxes. And one has Chul and the other one has Truma. V'lifneim Shtei Sa'in, Acha Shachul, and V'acha Shal Truma. And in front of them, you'll have two more boxes, one made up of chul and the other made up of truma. So if you want to picture the scene, so let's say you have a table. On the table you have two boxes, one labeled truma, one labeled chul. Let's take the labels off, just so that we understand why everyone got confused. But the reality is that one had chulin and the other one had truma. And in front of them, you had two more boxes right below the table, and one had truma, the other one had chulin. And so this Mishnah tells us it's a Tosefta, but anyway, so it tells us that if one box falls into the one box and the other box falls into the other box, so we can assume and allege that the truma fell into the truma and the chulin fell into the chulin. Now, obviously, this is an easy statistical problem. What are the chances that we're right? The obvious answer is 50%. Meaning, if we don't know and we're just guessing, so obviously we're banking on a 50% chance that we're right. Now, if a non-Kohen were to eat truma, that would be a significant prohibition. That's not only is that a lav, it's the onus is misa b'day shamayim. And yet over here, we're very comfortable to say that that we'll assume the chulim went into the chulim, the truma went into the truma. And so non-Kohanim can eat the box of truma, even though something fell in, and with a 50% chance of that something that fell in is actually going to be truma, but we'll just simply say that the chulin fell into the chulin, truma fell into the chulin. I'm sorry. The chulin fell into the chulin and the truma fell into the truma. V'yamar Ish Lakish, v'hu, she'rabu chulin ala truma. So Reish Lakish says that the only time that this brisa is in effect, the only time that this brisa is correct is only where there is more chulin than there is truma. That means to say that even though we are alleging that the chulin fell in the chulin, truma fell into the truma, even if the truma fell into the chulin, there's just a little bit more truma than there is chulin. So even if we're wrong, there's going to be bittul on a d'oraisa level. And Rav Yochanan Amar Af Al Pi Shelo Rabu Chulin Ala Truma. And Rav Yochanan says, no, that's not necessary. Meaning, you could just read the Braisa Kipshuto. And that is that even if it's a one-to-one ratio, and even though we don't know which fell into what, we could just simply allege and assume the Chulin fell into Chulin, Truma fell into the Truma. And even if the Truma would have fallen into the Chulin, and even though it is a one-to-one ratio, we're not worried about that. Now, Bishlam L'Reish L'Kasar V'Bidu Rabban Nami Ribu Yehuda B'Inan. So for Reish L'Kish, I understand. Meaning Reish L'Kish requires that there be just a little bit more chulin than there is truma, even though Reish L'Kish is of the opinion that truma bizman is a din derabbanan. So fine. So I understand the sheet of Reish L'Kish. But Ela Rav Yochanan Kasha. But for Rav Yochanan, it's really difficult. Because remember, for Rav Yochanan, what kind of isser are we talking about? We're talking about an isser de araisa. Truma bizman is an isser de araisa. So for us to just simply casually say, don't worry. All right, I bet the truma fell in the truma, the chulin fell in the chulin. Even though you don't know, even though you have a 50% chance of being right, you equally have a 50% chance of being wrong. On an issur d'oraisa, meaning what do we normally say by a suffix issur d'oraisa? A suffix on an issur d'oraisa, we go the chumra. And over here, this position of Rav Yochanan is nearly impossible to understand. How can he just simply casually allege, don't worry, when the isser in play over here is an isser d'oraisa? That's a really strong question. The Gemara's response, Hamani Rabbanani. So in defense of Rav Yochanan, the Gemara says, the brisa we just learned together is not according to everybody, it's according to the Chachamim, but he doesn't subscribe to the sheet of the Chachamim. In fact, so he subscribes to a different sheet, as the Gemara is about to present. Hamani Rabbanani. V'ana. But I, on the other hand, as we turn to the Pei Beis Amud Beis, Vana Damrika Rav Yossi. I, on the other hand, hold like Rav Yossi, the Tanya. the Seder Olam. Here we're going to be learning a brisa together. This brisa, Seder Olam. Seder Olam is a halachic work. It's a historic work. It was authored by Rav Yossi. It is basically a compilation of Chazal in terms of the history going all the way back to Maaseh Bereishis, all the way through and beyond Churban Bayis Sheni. And it is a historical account giving us the number of years that it was from all the way back from Maaseh Bereishis. And it is Chazal's historical record. But not only is it a historical record, it also has halachic implications as well. Here's a perfect example. Asher Yeshua Vasech Rishta. So the pasuk at the end of Sefer Devarim tells us that they will inherit the land and they will inherit the land. The double Yerusha. What does that mean? Yerusha, Rishonim Vishniya Yesh Lahem, Vishishi Sein Lahem. There will be a first Yerusha. There will be a second Yerusha. There will not be a third Yerusha. What does that mean? Look at Rashi. Rashi, over your third line down, Yerusha Rishona Bimei Yoshua, Havi Yerusha. Vechen Shnia Dibimei Ezra, Dechishigalu Galus Rishona, Bala Kedusha Saris. So when we came into the Eretz Yisrael for the first time, i.e. Yoshua, so there we had to invest the land with Kedusha. Yoshua did so. When we came into Eretz Yisrael a second time during the time of Ezra, once again, we had to invest the land with Kedusha. That's what Ezra did. From that point going forward, there's no need to invest the land with Kedusha. Why? Because after Ezra invests the land with Kedusha, the Kedusha will stay there in perpetuity. Meaning to say that even after the second base of Mishra is destroyed, there's still going to be Kedusha. Meaning that all the mitzvahs atluis ba'aretz are still going to be in full force, even without the second base of Mikdash. Now, this is all according to the Seder Olam. Who is the author of Seder Olam? V'am Rav Yochanan, Mantana Seder Olam, Rabbi Yossi. V'savur Rav Yochanan, sorry, that's already the next point. So the author of Seder Olam is Rav Yossi, and Rav Yochanan subscribes to the position of Seder Olam. If you would like to see another interesting way in terms of how to understand the Yerusha Rishona, Yerusha Shnia, see Tosfos over here, quotes Rabbeinu Hananel, and has an extensive discussion of Rabbeinu Hananel's interpretation. But right now for us, we're obviously just going to stay with Rashi, in that the Yerusha Rishona is Yoshua, Yerusha Shnia is Ezra, and then from that point going forward, there's no longer need for a Yerusha, for any investment of Kedusha, because it remains in perpetuity. No explanation here why that is. Many explanations are offered, but we're just going to go on in the Gemara just to get a basic overview of today's daf. What comes out now is that Rav Yochanan holds that Truma is Bizman is Ezra Raisa. What about the Braisa on the bottom of the previous Amud? So what Rav Yochanan will tell you is that Braisa is not authored by Rav Yossi. It's authored by a collection of Tanaim who argue with Rav Yossi, who say that with the Churban Bayis Sheni, the Kedusha is gone. But Rav Yochanan will tell you that I subscribe to Shita Rav Yossi. Yes, it's interesting that normally we don't follow a Shita Siachit against Rabin, but Rav Yochanan had a Masara that Rav Yossi is the halachic viewpoint. And therefore, he's of the position that the Kedusha is Nimshach. It just simply continues even after the Beis HaMikdash is no longer there. Okay, so we have now successfully defended Rav Yochanan. One more point for today. V'savar Rav Yochanan b'drabban lo b'inim ribuyeh. Rav Yochanan says that when it comes to a din d'rabbanan, we don't need a little bit of excess, a little bit over, meaning in the case that we just learned regarding Truma, what did we say? That by a din d'oraisa, in the event that the Truma and the Chulin fall into two boxes, we don't know which one they fell into. One fell into a Truma box, the other one fell into a Chulin box, and we don't know which one fell into which. So we casually assume the Truma went to the Truma, the Chulin fell into the Chulin. At which point Rav Yochanan said, yes, that's true, but that entire Braisa is going like the Chachamim. And the Chachamim hold that it's a Din D'Rabbanan. I personally don't hold that way. I hold that Truma Bizman is a Din D'Raisa, but the authors of that Braisa hold like that Truma is a Din D'Rabbanan. Fine. What it comes out now is that at least we see that according to Rav Yochanan, when it is in fact a Din D'Rabbanan, there is no requirement on the part of Rav Yochanan to have a little bit of overage, meaning it would be sufficient to just simply have like amounts by Din D'Rabbanan. The Gemara says that's interesting because we know another Shita Rav Yochanan, which is a Din D'Rabbanan, and that is the following, V'atanan. We know a Mishnah together. So, Mikvah Shesh Bo Arbaim Sa Mechuvanos. Let's say a Mikvah has exactly 40 Sa, which is the base amount of volume of water that a Mikvah needs. Nasan Sa V'natal Sa Kasher. And let's say one Sa at a time, you replace it with other liquids. Look at Rashi over here. Nasan Sa V'natal Sa Kasher. Gabi Sharmashkin, Umei Peros Vitemet, Shihichmitz, Kai, Bemesechas Mikvas. So we're talking about fruit juices, or some I guess we can call it bug juice. Anyway, the ashmina daafagav the chazav anato the ikal amemra ha chazav le mikva shaza hazos in mashlimaso shein ruy le mikva. I feel a hachi kasha the mechi yavu le gabe batole vavu arbeim v'chad the kulin ruyin. So what's going to happen now is that when you first introduce that extra sauce, so now you're at 41. And then when you take one away, v'chishakol chatzah pashu arbayim. So then you're going to be left with 40. So in other words, you're always going to be inserting the extra sauce before taking out that sauce. Aval ibchalo d'chinato sauce b'reisha chasolei. Of course, Rashi notes that if I take out a sauce first and then replace it, so then obviously the mikvah is going to be chaser. And then would you replace it with fruit juice, which is not water, so then it's not going to be kosher. Okay. So anyway, so just an important note over here by Rashi in terms of how this case is actually going to manifest. First, you introduce the non-water water, and then you take out the saw of mikvah water. I understand it's easier to say conceptually than it is practically. In other words, once you're adding non-water in, there's going to be some sort of distribution. Okay, anyway, but conceptually it's easy to see. And that I'm introducing non-water into the mikvah, taking out an equal portion of mikvah water. And of course, as long as I maintain that 40 sa, it's going to be kasher. The Amr of Yehuda bar Shila, Amr of Asi, Amr of Yochanan. So here's a critical component, that is that this memra is said in the name of Rabbi Yochanan. Notably, Ad Rubo. This works only up until the point of majority. What does that mean? My love, Nishar Rubo. Simply what it means, the easiest way to say it over, is that you have to leave over a majority of the mikvah water. Meaning, it's not enough to go down to 20-20, but there must be 20 plus a little bit more of the original mikvah water, and then and only then is this maneuver going to work. As long as you have left the majority of mikvah water, it's fine. If you are down to half mikvah water against half non-mikvah water, half fruit juice, so then it's not going to be acceptable. So that's the assumption over here, which means that even though this is a din d'rabban, it's not a din d'oraisa. So but you still need a rov. You need a majority. So to which the Gemara says, nah, lo, delo nishkal rubo. I'm sorry, lo, delo nishkal rubo. Now, one way to interpret it is that it just simply means that you can't take out more than the majority, meaning you can go up to halfway. Alternatively, here's what you could say. You could say that the way to understand Rav Yochanan in the case of the mikvah is rov. It only works up until the majority. But anytime that you go below the majority, it doesn't work. Aye, so why didn't we say the same thing regarding the case of the sa'ah of truma and the sa'ah of chulin that fall into the truma and chulin? So over there, you have also a mitigating consideration as well. Meaning over there, there were two boxes that got dumped into two other boxes. So over there, coupled with the fact that it is mechsa, together with the fact that I also have the ability to say that the chulin fell into the chulin and the truma fell into the truma. So since I have both of those working in my favor, in such a scenario, we're going to be mekel. Over here, where I don't have this kind of argument that I can make in the case of the mikvah, so in the case of the mikvah, so I'm going to need a majority of the kosher mikvah water in order for this mikvah to be kosher. Adkan, we're going to stop over here, and tomorrow we'll pick it up and we're going to head back to the topic of androgynous in tomorrow's daf. A quick recap of what really is a intricate and complicated daf. And honestly, all I gave today is just simple pshat in the Gemara, together with Rashi. In other words, generally speaking, I followed Rashi. But it is, however, a complex daf, admittedly. So let's just quickly review. So what we did is that we went over the shitas of Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish regarding Truma Bizman Hazeh. According to Rav Yochanan, Truma Bizman Hazeh is Daraisa. Reish Lakish says that Truma Bizman Hazeh is Darabanan. As we learned at the end of today's daf, Rav Yochanan Shita dovetails with the shita of Rav Yossi that says that the Kedusha of Bayi Sheni exists in perpetuity even in the absence of the second base of Mikdash. Again, no explanation why, but that is the position of Seder Olam, authored by Rav Yossi. Rav Yochanan subscribes to that viewpoint. The other big topic that we covered is a Devashe B'Minyan.
A davar shebeminyan is not subject to bittul because a davar shebeminyan is considered a davar chashuv within the shita of davar shebeminyan, not being subject to bittul. Once again, here comes a machlokas Reish Lakish Rav Yochanan. Rav Yochanan has a limited definition of davar shebeminyan. It's only something that's exclusively sold by count. Something that's generally sold by count is not a davar shebeminyan. Reish Lakish is of the opinion that something which is generally sold by count is in fact a davar shebeminyan. What took up half of our daf today, starting on Pei Alpha and Beis, going through a good part of Pei Beis and Aleph, is a defense of Reish Lakish. Because the Braisa giving us the case of a Karban Chatas that gets mixed up with another Karban Chatas, one being Tamidi and the rest of them being Taharos, and even though I have the ratios of 1 to 100, not even. And because I have the ratios of 1 to 100, there's going to be Bittul. So these are talking about pieces of Chatas, which are normally sold by count, and yet there's Bittul. If you're Rav Yochanan, that's great, because it's not exclusively sold by count. It's only generally sold by count. It's not a Davar Shebeminyan according to Rav Yochanan. That's great. But according to Reish Lakish, that becomes problematic. Reish Lakish is of the opinion that a Davar Shebeminyan is even something that's generally sold by count. This is a Davar Shebeminyan according to Reish Lakish, so there shouldn't be Bittul. Why is there Bittul over here? So the first half of today's daf attempts to answer that question, and that part admittedly is a complicated piece of Gemara attempting to defend Reish Lakish. The second half of the daf is that a challenge to Rav Yochanan, where Rav Yochanan's of the opinion that Truma Bizmanis is a din deraisa, and meanwhile, the Braisa, the Tosefta in Trumos, introduces us to a case where I have two boxes in front of two boxes. One box is filled with Truma, the box below is filled with Truma, one box is filled with Chulin on top, one box is filled with Chulin on bottom. And what happens is that one box, the boxes on the top empty into the boxes on the bottom, and we don't know which one went into which. And the Braisa says, no sweat. You can just assume the Chulin went in. The Chulin Truma went into the Truma. And according to Rav Yochanan holds that Truma Bizman says it in Daraisa. We're talking about a Suffolk Daraisa. And why is he comfortable by a Suffolk Daraisa? Meaning Suffolk Daraisa, we normally are Machmir. And over here, we're just going to be Makel. So how can that possibly be? So that was a difficult question for Rav Yochanan. Rav Yochanan will tell you that Braisa is holding that Truma Bizman says the Rabbanan, meaning that Braisa is authored by Etana, who happens to disagree with his position. He, Rav Yochanan, on the other hand, follows the Shita Rav Yossi, holds that Truma Bizman says the Daraisa. Otherwise stated, Truma Bizman says being Daraisa the Rabbanan is not just a machlokes between Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish, it's also a machlokes Etanaim, where Rav Yochanan takes a clear position like Rav Yossi, not like the Chachamim. Okay, and that's how he would defend himself. And then the last part of today's daf, which we did, was this idea that by a din de rabbanan, by an iser de rabbanan, in order to affect bittul, so I need a little bit more of the heter than I do of the iser. Right? In the case of mikvah, we're talking about water against fruit juice. I need a little bit more water than I do fruit juice. 21 saw of water versus 19 fruit juice. Okay, and exactly how we introduced the fruit juice to get to 19, we spoke about, but anyway. So I need a little bit more. So why over there do I need a little bit more? But in the case of the Truma Chulin that falls into the Truma Chulin, can it be equal amounts? What's the difference between the cases? So either the Gemara says there is no difference between the cases, we just have to learn the case of the mikvah a little bit better. Alternatively, there's a difference to be said between the cases. Okay, Adkan.